You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Is there a Spotify Wrapped for investing? If you want to invest in shares or ETFs, our friends at Perla are more than one step ahead of the curve. On average, people who use Perla invest $1,750 every month. That's what we want to see, proper dollar cost averaging. With automated investing tools making your life simple, Perla investors have well and truly mastered the art of investing small bits lots of times. So, if you're ready to start growing your net worth in 2024, follow the link in your Spotify or Apple Podcast player right now to discover how you can get started today.
Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only.
Do you want to improve your relationship with money? A helpful tool when we're trying to improve our finances is asking ourselves questions that push us to be curious and really uncover our relationship with money. This is important because so much of our financial success depends on our behavior, not how smart we are, how much money we have, or what investments we choose. I've put together this list of 10 questions that you can ask yourself, and I recommend grabbing a piece of paper or opening a Google Doc so you can brainstorm your responses and what comes up immediately for you as we go through this episode. You can then check out the show notes for the full list of questions that you can work through over the next few weeks. It might be overwhelming to do it all at once, but these are really important questions to better understand your relationship with money. Now, I've got Owen on the show to go through these 10 questions with me and provide some insightful responses on what he thinks.
Yes, well, I'm excited because these are really thought-provoking questions, Kate. And they're actually a bit of fun. They're not like, some of them are surely, you know, deep and you're looking inward on yourself. But for most of them, they're actually really interesting activities and thought-provoking. So I like them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. The first one is, what was your experience with money like growing up? So why would we want to know what the experience with money is?
Well, some of the research has found that individuals tend to carry beliefs about money and money skills learned in childhood into their adult lives. And some of the behavioral finance researchers, Brad and Ted Klontz out of the US, have said that money beliefs are developed in childhood. They're passed down from generation to generation throughout families. They're typically unconscious, so we're not thinking about them every day. They're bound by context to the situation, and they also drive a lot of our financial behavior. So getting to understand your experience with money growing up, and we've spoken to Karen Ely about this on the show in the past, is really important to understand why you might be making or not making the decisions you're currently making with money.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people may resonate with how I think about it, which is the second activity, which is money, your money story and knowing that. So I'll get you to go on that one in just a second. But experience growing up with money, very stressful, very stressful. I think maybe in some instances I knew too much about our financial situation as a family, particularly through my teenage years where it was predominantly my mum taking care of us. And that caused a lot of stress. And that's pretty common for people that come from mixed families or single income parents and thinking about it that way. That's probably the reflection I have. That's my experience with money growing up, is not really having enough to ever feel stable.
Whereas I probably had the opposite experience. I didn't talk about money around the dinner table, but money was never a source of stress and it was never hidden away. And I knew that if I wanted to talk to my parents about money, I probably could. It wasn't until after I finished high school and left home that I started having money conversations with my parents, because suddenly things were costing money and I was talking to them about different parts of my finances as I was starting to save and figuring out investing on my own. But it never seemed like something that I shouldn't talk about. And so that's impacted me as well. And something I spoke about before on the podcast, but also in my book, Buying Happiness, is one of the unique things I got from my parents was that that would push me to take risks a lot. So I felt really comfortable putting my hand up for things, giving things a go, even though I wasn't very good at them. And that's really helped me invest today, because now I feel comfortable investing. I'm okay with there being risk involved. And it meant that I could start investing a lot more quickly than a lot of people, because I wasn't trying to get everything right. I just jumped in and figured it out as I went.
I like that. I like that idea of the risk versus reward and feeling safe enough to do that with money, which is really, really cool. What about your money story? I know that when we've had Karen on the show, as you mentioned in the past, she talks a lot about this. So first of all, what is the money story and what are we trying to do here?
Your money story is really just understanding all of the experiences you had with money, but kind of figuring it out as a narrative. And whether you spend 30 minutes and just journal and write down all of the things that come to mind when you think about money from the youngest age you can remember to date. And what were the key experiences that stand out to you? What are some of the emotions that come up? Does money feel like a stressful thing to you? Does it feel like it's a sense of security? Does it feel like something you're always comparing to with other people? All these emotions, experiences, everything that comes to mind. And also thinking about, well, what were my part-time jobs during school? What was my pocket money? Did we go on holidays as a family? What was money like at school? Did I talk to other kids about money? Everything you can possibly think about. And that really helps you to understand what your current views are about money.
Interesting. This is an interesting thing, because with me and my partner, we have very different money stories, it would be fair to say. And what it's actually translated to is the way, as we covered in the first point, that experience has shaped now how we kind of, the narrative we build around money. And so, for example, I've always felt like I'm stressed about money, always had this kind of like scratching desire to do more. I feel like I'm kind of in constant in flight mode. If you think about that fight or flight, I'm constantly like trying to run away from those anxieties by getting more, bringing more in, doing these types of things. When really, if I just stopped and categorized it as like a story through time, there's different scenes. There's like the first scene, which was like a dawning where I felt like I didn't have anything, university, where I felt like maybe I was struggling, but I could earn money, which was really, really good for a change. Then getting into working life, which I was a contractor and I was earning really good money, but I didn't feel like it at the time because I'd just come off 10 or 15 years of not having any. And now, you know, then starting the business, didn't have a lot of money. And more recently, obviously, I went for years without a wage through RASC, but now it's obviously very, very different. So like there's different chapters in that money story, if you like.
And once you've got it written down, you can see if there's any common threads or patterns that you can see repeated throughout, even though you've been in different phases of your life and you might have been living at home and then you were a student and you were starting a business and you were working, you're investing. Are there any threads or patterns you can see of behavior that stand out to you that you can use to better inform your financial decisions?
Definitely. Yeah. And that's really interesting. That'd be a really interesting exercise for people. Definitely more like a sieve than I probably admit, as in like money hits my pocket and it disappears sometimes. So that still happens from time to time. And that's very like a hangover from when I was younger and overcompensating with money. So I think a lot of people could learn so much about themselves by kind of just thinking about what's been the journey as a child, adolescent, young adult, really interesting introspection.
And the more knowledge you have about yourself, the better you can make decisions in the future. Like maybe you realize everyone in your family said that it was really bad to invest. It was something that only other people did. You're not an investor. That might have been true and that might have been true to them, but it doesn't have to be your story going forward. So understanding that gives you the first step to unpacking it and going, okay, well, it's not actually a bad thing to invest. I can invest. There's no reason I can't. And then why do I want to invest? How am I going to invest? So you can start thinking about the future steps you're going to take.
Mm, I like it. Question number three is, what does money mean to you? Do you view it as inherently good, bad, or just a necessary tool? I remember when we had Queenie on the show, I think it was the first time or second time she was on the show, she mentioned how she always assumed that having money meant it was evil because of all the movies suggest that the bad guy is always the dude with money, right? How do you think about it? What does money mean to you?
I think now it is a tool, it is a resource, it is something that's going to allow me to have more choices in the future. And that's changed over time. When I first left high school, I only had $1,000 and I had to start from scratch like many 18-year-olds do. But then it was just something, oh, I could probably find a bit more of it. I didn't really need to keep it. And that slowly changed over time as I've started going, okay, well, having an emergency fund is a priority to me. And that gives me a sense of security. And then having investments gives me a lot of security and control. And I think to me, Karen pushed me on this question when we did an episode in the past. And to me, it's control and independence. That's what money is to me. And it's important to know that because if you're talking with your friends or family or partner about money, money to them might mean something very different. To someone else, money might mean freedom or security or fear. And if you have different values and meanings to money and you haven't discussed those, sometimes that is why you're going to clash.
It's really interesting. And I think, yeah, if you do talk about that with your partner, you can run through all of these exercises with your partner. For me, I was just trying to think about it as you were answering the question. It's somewhere between convenience and time. So having more money is a tool that enables me to have time. But you said control. I think Morgan Housel has that saying, it's financial freedom is doing what you want, when you want, with who you want, which is a really interesting way to phrase it too. So time would be translating to, you know, going outside and throwing the bone for your dog, or it could mean spending extra time with your family and not really thinking like about any urgency. There's no urgency to go and do something. It also means that if life throws you a curveball, you can respond in a way that's convenient. So family member's sick, you can jump on a flight regardless of the cost. You know, those types of things. It makes your life more convenient. Question number four, Kate, was the most fun one that I could think in the list. And I often think about this. What would you do if you were given $1 million? Before you answer that question, why are you asking it?
I'm using this as a question to help better understand what your values are with money. And it's good to write down your immediate thought about what you would do with $1 million and then think about it a bit more and let all your filters and your values and your priorities float in and then write down what you would do with $1 million. Because immediately I might say one thing, I might say I'll buy a farm. And then if I think about it a bit more, I might say I'm going to invest in my ETF portfolio. Or for you, it could be a European holiday for all the family and friends and donate to charity.
Yeah. So what would you do with $1 million?
I think I'd buy a farm.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting one just to think about what your values are with money and what your priorities are. And you can also play around with this by changing the amount. So it might be interesting to see what you would do with $1,000 because that's a very different amount. And you might see there's something that you really want right now, or what are your priorities immediately? What would you do with $10,000, $100,000? So you can play around with this depending on how realistic you want to make the scenario, or if you want to think about what are your dreams with money.
Okay, so $1 million might be more of a dream for some people. Like, I might take $1 million and put it in the VHY dividend ETF so I can get in passive income.
Yeah.
Or it might be.
That's probably not your immediate thought.
No, my immediate thought is I would buy the farm, then release the equity and invest VHY and then live off the income. So anyway, I have thought about this. I've done this mental exercise maybe
10 or 20 times over the past 5 years, and it's all basically come back to a very similar strategy. It's probably not enough to retire on for me, but it is enough that I can get really creative with. I could get the farm that I want while also using some other, you know, what we call equity release strategy. I'll save that for another time.
Yeah.
But if you did it on $10,000, that's more realistic, like you said, and probably achievable to a lot of people that listen to this podcast, is what would you do with $10,000?
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting one because it's probably more achievable in the short term.
Yeah. And I think in the short term,
helps you prioritize.
I'm using $10,000 for travel.
Same.
So using these different amounts helps you work out, well, what are my goals at the moment? What are my priorities? What would I do with the money? And then you ask your partner or your friend or your family member, and that helps you understand what their values are.
The next question, Kate, is looking back over the past year, what have been the most meaningful things that you've spent money on? I know you did this for your book in a roundabout way.
This is an important question because we can often spend money without being intentional at all, and it can quickly leave our bank account and we can get to the end of the month and go, where did I spend my money? I didn't really get any value from this spending. And so doing this exercise to look back over, you could do past year, past month, past quarter, whatever you want to do, but looking through your bank statement and going, what left a memory? Mm. What am I still glad I spent money on? What can I see in my house right now that still makes me really happy? And you can get a better idea of what things bring you joy and what you value. And then you can look at that statement too and also think about what didn't you get any value from? Maybe that meal out was just blur. Maybe you didn't care about buying Uber Eats.
So what have been those most meaningful things for you?
For me, it's usually books and travel and...
Any book in particular though, Kate?
What am I reading at the moment? I'm actually... reading one I didn't have to pay for because I had Spotify. I'm trying to get everyone to use the Spotify premium hack of 15 free Spotify hours a month. But I'm listening to one about ghost towns at the moment and a man that's rebuilding an old American mining town that had been abandoned.
Hmm. Interesting.
Bit random.
My most meaningful one, bigger purchase, was a boat. And it's both good and bad because I look at it and I think to myself, every time it's in the driveway, I'm thinking, damn, you're beautiful, but you cost me a lot of money and you sit there most of the time doing nothing. And that gives me a bit of anxiety, if
Airbnb
I'm honest.
Airbnb the boat out?
Yeah, you probably could, like lease it out. Friends and family are free to use it whenever they want. A lot of them don't, but some of them do. Some of them say, hey, do you mind? I'm like, sure, go for it. And that makes me happier because it eases my anxiety around how much it costs. But that's one of the meaningful things. So yeah.
Spending money on taking other people out is very meaningful to me. So I'd much rather buy two tickets to a show instead of one. It costs me more money, but I get to take someone out with me and enjoy the experience together.
Love it. Number six on the list of questions to identify your relationship with money is what amount of money in your savings account makes you feel like you can meet any of life's costs and expenses? That's an interesting question.
Yes. And I want to read a quote first from Morgan Housel, who wrote The Psychology of Money, which Owen and I very much enjoy. Mm-hmm. The concept of enough money doesn't necessarily mean you have no aspirations for more. It means you realize that if your expectations grow faster than your income, you'll always be disappointed and taking too much risk. And I think this question is an interesting one because it really helps us understand what makes us feel secure and what makes us feel in control. And if we don't think about what is enough for us, and it's not the big number, it's not like, oh, we could buy all these things. It's, well, what is enough in our savings and investments that we can meet our family's expenses?
Mm. I love it. And interesting with Morgan's quote is kind of, if you constantly are on that treadmill of wanting more and more and more and more, you'll probably end up being disappointed. And yeah, there's so many wonderful quotes about this, but you know, if you don't have that plan, if you don't have that end goal in mind, you're just going to drift off into the distance. And I often see that, it's really interesting when I either coach people or some of our investors or people in our community or who are not in our community, what I've really honed in on over the past few years is that it's the people who have money but think they need more are easily the most anxious and the most unhappy. So I'm talking about people who may send their kids to private school because they have enough money, but they're comparing themselves against the other people who don't even notice where their kids go to school because they've got so much money. And those are the people that seem to be really unhappy because they're striving for so much and yet they don't really know why, and they never really get there. I guess the old cliche is like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And I think for this is what I think about a lot, is that a lot of people don't know what that endpoint looks like. So they don't ever know if they arrive. And I think once you know what that looks like, you will feel content. And contentment is such a wonderful thing.
So I think it's really important to write this number down right now. You might not know how you're creating that number, and that's something you can unpack and explore over time. But write down this number, and then as you go through your personal finance and investing journey, see if that number changes. Because at the start, you might say $500,000, $10,000, $100,000, whatever that number is for you. And then as you start investing and start learning, you might start to realize that number's creeping higher. And that's a really interesting thing to explore as well. Is that benchmark changing for you? Are you starting to compare yourself to different people since you've got a pay rise, since you've started investing? Your goalposts might start shifting. And so if you can write it down, and then even if it does shift because you have more information, you might think $10,000 is more than you need to feel secure. And that might be your very first emergency fund ticked off.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're there, you might realize, okay, I want a bit more money to put aside to make me feel financially secure. Just notice that and write it down and track over time. And at least then, if the benchmark does move and if you start increasing your feeling of enough, you've got something to track it with.
I like it. Next question. What fears do you have about money and investing? Why? I think I know why. But what are we trying to get out of this question? What fears do you have about money and investing?
Fear impacts the way we make decisions. It impacts the things we think about when we're making the decision. It impacts what options we think we have available to us. It might stop us investing because we're really scared about investing or scared of losing money. That might mean we never actually start investing. We might be scared to talk about money with our partner, so we never have that conversation until it all blows up and then we split up, because that's what happens in a vast majority of circumstances. People in relationships don't talk about money for many different reasons, but a lot of people just have never had that conversation. So if you start thinking about what scares you about money, what scares you about investing, and then you can either get to understand that bit of you better, and maybe there's some mindset changes you can make or some behavioral changes, or you could myth bust that fear. It might be, if I invest, I will lose all that money. If that's your fear, then there's things you can do. You can educate yourself. You can talk to a financial advisor, maybe a money coach, and start to say, there's all this other evidence that shows that I'm not necessarily going to lose all my money by investing. Maybe if I do X, Y, and Z, like someone I knew did, that might mean I lose money, but that doesn't have to be my future. So you can kind of myth bust your fears in many cases.
So you find out what the facts are versus what your opinion or perception is.
Yeah, and try to build enough evidence to show yourself, and often you might need to talk to an expert to do this, that it's a fear, but it's not, doesn't have to keep being true.
Mm, I like that. Karen Ely is a money coach who has appeared on the show before. Karen, Women Talking Finance, I believe is her business. You can get in contact with her online. She's a money coach. She's wonderful at this type of thing. Just as a side note. Number 8, what thoughts do you have about retirement? Retirement for me, it's still a little bit of a way off, Kate, but I do think about it insofar as what would I need if I wanted to be an early retiree? You know, one of the FIRE people, financial independence, retire early. What would I need? It loops back into that $1 million question before. I would probably be able to retire with $1 million, provided all my debts were paid off. But
including your mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be separate to the $1 million.
Absolutely everything. Yeah. Would that be enough for me? It'd be enough for me to feel like I'm fully retired, even if I don't choose to be. But why do you ask this question? Like, feelings about retirement. I imagine older people would be quite fearful.
Most people don't think about retirement until it's very, very close. And we struggle to connect with our future selves. I read a really interesting book called Your Future Self. There you go.
Interesting.
Classic name.
Says it on the tin.
And it looks at all the research, and the guy writing it actually did a lot of the research in the US about how much trouble we find it to connect with our future self. And that means we find it really hard to delay the gratification and put money aside for our retirement or our future. And so just starting to think about, have you ever thought about retirement? Do you feel really disconnected from that future version of you? Thinking 10, 20, 40 years ahead, can you connect with that version of yourself at all? And one of the activities he got participants to do was to get an aged up photo of themselves. So he got them to put it in FaceApp or something and suddenly look at a picture of themselves at 60 or 70. And looking at that photo, participants started to connect with their future selves a little bit more and were able to put more aside for their retirement. And just thinking about your retirement, most of us don't feel connected. So if we can just start to think about, this is me in the future, and what can I do today that's going to be kind for that person, which is me in the future? Maybe it's just checking where your super is and checking it's in the right investment option for you and checking your insurances. Small little changes you can make to be kind to future version of you. And if printing out a photo of 70-year-old you and putting on the fridge helps, do that.
I like it. 70-year-old Kate, I remember when you first discovered this research and...
I did it. The photo was a bit scary.
Okay, interesting. Number 9, second from last, is when was the last time you had a conversation with someone about money? For me, it was probably yesterday. You?
We talked about money at lunch.
Well, other than us, and we talk about money a lot in the office, it drives Monique, our podcast manager, off stage. I imagine it drives her a little bit insane, but she's smiling. That's the main thing. But seriously, most people aren't talking about money like we are every day. Most people don't sit behind a microphone and obsess about these things. When was the last time you had a conversation with someone about money? I think most people would relate to their partner, maybe their kids.
Their parents?
Or their parents.
A sibling?
Yeah. I know you talked about this a little bit in your book when you realized when you were younger, you were talking to a friend and you realize they're probably not as engaged. I think that you were in your late teens or something like that. So it's about finding someone that can actually get into the conversation, I guess.
Yeah, and you want to find someone that's at a similar level or maybe one or two steps ahead on their own journey. So if you're just figuring out how to pay off your credit card debt and you're talking to someone that has a fancy house and all the stuff, it might not be very easy for you to relate about money, and you might not be able to get the encouragement that you need to pay off that credit card debt. So it might be worth finding someone else who's working really hard to get themselves out of debt or who has recently got themselves out of debt to help keep yourself accountable along the way and share what worked, share what didn't work. Sometimes it can be difficult if you're talking to someone 10, 20, 30 years ahead of you on the journey because they've forgotten all of the steps often at the very start that got them there.
Yeah.
And they haven't gone through recently all the feelings. So if I've been investing for 10 or 20 years and I'm speaking to someone who's still struggling to make their first investment, I might not be able to relate as much because I've kind of forgotten those emotions and the feelings that come up when you're just about to make your very first investment and it's really overwhelming and it's nerve-wracking and you feel like you might be making the wrong decision. I might be 20 years down the track. So finding someone similar point or a couple of steps ahead of you is a really good place to start to have those conversations. And if you can't find someone in your own life, then maybe just lurking in some online forums, keeping in mind that people are sharing lots of different things on forums and doesn't mean it's true, but it couldn't be a good place to see that other people are having conversations about money, other people are having challenges about money.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Number 10, 10 out of 10, Kate, is do you feel in control of your financial future?
This is a pulse check question after all of the questions we've just gone through. And this question could bring up lots of different feelings for you. And it might make you think that there's a lot of work you need to do. Or it might make you think that I've got a plan. I've automated it. I'm fairly confident that I'm going in the right direction. I'm working on my career. Actually, I do feel in control. So this question, let it be a sort of guiding question of whether you need to do a little bit more, and maybe you need to work on a few pieces of your financial plan. Maybe you need to talk to a financial advisor, or maybe you're actually doing okay and you can congratulate yourself on the progress you've made so far.
Yeah, I like it. A lot of people would probably think that it comes down to your job and how secure you feel in your job as well. So is there things you can do there with your getting a pay rise, taking more responsibility, getting yourself out of debt, these types of things. So let's just quickly recap these 10 questions. Number one was, what was your experience with money like growing up? Number two was, what is your money story and getting people to do that activity? Number three, Kate?
What does money mean to you? And do you view it as inherently good, bad, or do you view it as a tool?
Mm-hmm.
Number four is, what would you do if you were given $1 million or $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000?
So you go from dreams and then you bring it back until you can prioritize the short term. Number five was, looking back over the past year, what have been the most meaningful things that you've spent money on? Number six is, what amount of money in your savings account makes you feel like you can meet any of life's expenses and costs?
Or what is enough to you?
Yep.
What would make you feel financially secure? So whatever variation of these questions is helpful. Seven is, what fears do you have about money and investing, and getting to understand the apprehensions, the self-doubt, the fear that comes up for you when you think about these topics? And maybe you don't have any, and that's great too, but most of us feel something niggling, and that will impact our financial decisions. So understanding that is important.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight is, what thoughts do you have about retirement? Do you have any thoughts about retirement? Maybe you need to check your super.
Mm, good idea. Good first step. Number nine was, when was the last time you had a conversation with someone about money?
And this is a good prompt that if you haven't had a conversation ever or for a long while with your partner or someone in your family or friend group about money, maybe you can be the one to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And last one, do a pulse check.
Yes. How do you currently feel about your finances? Do you feel financially fit? Do you feel in control of your financial future? Do you feel financially independent? How are you feeling right now about money? If you're not feeling great, what is one small action you can take today to start working on that? And we have plenty of free courses on RASC education if you're looking for what that next step could be.
Well, people can write these down, and we'd encourage them to do that, as you said, Kate. If you do want to share your responses with us, you will find a link in your podcast player that takes you to a form, and it's anonymous. It's a form that you can fill in these 10 questions and get a copy for yourself. And what we'll do is we'll collate some of the really interesting answers and bring them up on our next Money and Chill or Australian Finance podcast episode once a few of us have had a chance to fill it in. I think these questions are absolutely wonderful, and it'll be great to see what everyone else thinks about their situation and their goals and the way they feel about money. So, Kate, this was heaps of fun. Lots for folks to go on. Really, really important part for partners and people in relationships as well to understand themselves and their partner. If they can sit down and go through even some of these questions with them, that would be wonderful. So as always, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to RASC Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a RASC Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
Are you thinking about starting your wealth-creating journey, but not sure where to put your hard-earned dollars? InvestSmart can help. InvestSmart offers a free quiz that makes it easy to find the right InvestSmart ETF portfolio to help you reach your goals. Just visit investsmart.com.au and hit Get Started. Answer a few simple questions about your goals and how much you want to invest, and you'll get a tailored statement of advice
with a portfolio recommendation. You can visit investsmart.com.au for a no obligations free statement of advice. This ad is brought to you by InvestSmart Advice, AFSL 334107. For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called Rask Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. Rask Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. Rask Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the Rask Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.